What's up, y'all? Welcome to Conversation Piece with Patrick Armstrong. I'm the titular Patrick, and this is a show where we talk about the missing pieces of the conversations we're already having. Shout out to our returning listeners, and a high five and hello to everybody joining us for the very first time. I appreciate y'all being here in 2024, the year of the net. My guest today is a media consultant, speaker, mother, writer, former professional athlete, and coach, and author, and entrepreneur. Checking my list here. Okay, she does literally everything and even more. It is an honor and privilege to be able to dive into all of this today with my guest, Jennifer Magley. Thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Thank you for having me. I have been admiring the product that you're putting out, and for me to get on here is just like thrilling. I'm thrilled. I dressed up. I wore all my colors today.
Yeah, for the listener
for
at home not watching on YouTube.
That's right.
It is it is definitely the most colorful item of clothing that's been on the show so far.
Yeah, if we were to describe it, what would we say? It looks like I've been submerged in some dots.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. There's like a Pixar movie where I feel like those things like attached
pom-poms.
To people. Yeah.
It's a bunch of pom. It's a yarn pom-pom coat. We're wearing it for the show today. So.
Where did you get the coat, if you don't mind me asking?
Online.
Okay.
Yes. Many Muppets gave their life for this.
Wow.
You know?
Dark. Yes. With the Muppets.
Immediately with the villain. Yes, it's my villain era.
Okay.
And so we're embracing that villain energy straight from the get here.
Well, I appreciate that. Super excited again to have you on the show. I've been following your work at least since All Stars, I think, where I first saw you doing a whole bunch of stuff. Ever since then, including into your intro, just all of the different things that I've seen you do. And it's just like, I'm so excited to dive into some of these topics. But before we get to all of that, for folks who may not know who you are, do you mind sharing a little bit more about yourself?
Yes, I'm currently the Chief Brand Officer, CBO. It's a title we're starting to see more and more now at the Basketball League and Basketball Super League. And those leagues help guys, like, you know, we're coming into March Madness.
Mm-hmm.
These guys that don't get drafted, they're not in the NBA G League. What are they going to do? Typically, they go overseas, but now they can stay stateside and play in TBL and hopefully get called up to different leagues and have different opportunities. Before that, I was in tech. I was a technical recruiter working with VC firms, placing top talent, analytics engineers, machine learning engineers, not very sexy, but very techie, as we'll say. But it was cool to be able to negotiate those salaries. You know, somebody tells you, I'm looking for $150K, and I was able to get them at $350.
Mm.
So that was fun, but I was a part of that bloodbath earlier last year.
Okay.
And got laid off. But, you know, my background is in professional sports. I grew up at IMG Academy.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of IMG?
In Florida?
Yes.
Okay.
I affectionately, jokingly call it the Hunger Games because, you know, who isn't looking to, you know, thwart their nemesis when they're 12 years old, right?
Absolutely. Like, that's all you do as a 12-year-old.
We're right here. Yeah. Like, you got a rivalry, right?
100%.
So that's where I spent most of my life, played at University of Florida, played on tour and was a Division I head coach and moved to Indy because I was going to be a stay-at-home mom, but ended up having a business and that's kind of where we are today. Reverse sleep, back into being an employee, and now, fast forward, CBO.
I love it. What did you do? What sport did you play at IMG?
Tennis.
Okay.
Played tennis. And that's what IMG started out as, the Nick Bollettieri Tennis Academy.
Okay.
So I grew up in the same era, Venus and Serena Williams. Mm. I guess that's, do we need to name anybody
else?
I mean, yeah, drop all those names. Venus and Serena and the rest. Yeah, so that was my childhood was 8 hours a day on the tennis court, no school. I mean, correspondence, but all about being number one, going for number one in the world.
So, was that something that like your parents wanted you to pursue, or is that something that, like young Jennifer was like, I'm going to do this. I don't really care.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. My dad gave me a racket and told me to go hit on the wall while he was playing basketball. He was a pro basketball player himself. So this was at the park, you know, instead of babysitting other kids and watching dogs. He's like, hit on the wall.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just have this thing that I always want people to know my name, which kind of leads into today.
Yeah.
You know, no one knows your name. Let's change that. That's my mantra.
Yep.
And anytime throughout my childhood, once there was a video camera, that's how old I am. There were like no video cameras back then. You would see me jumping up saying, look at me, look at me. And now I get to do that professionally, like 100% full time. So yes, I always wanted to be number one. And I mean, that's how you become addicted to achievement.
Sure.
whether, you know, for better or worse.
you looked away quickly, but yes. I think it's okay.
Yeah, addiction is totally fine.
There are bad things you can be addicted to. Right? And I think achievement isn't one of the worst ones.
I think it's the most affordable addiction, achievement.
I mean, sometimes it can be expensive, I think.
Yeah.
But then is that earned achievement or is that bought achievement?
Okay, so as a CBO, I have learned that most of this media we're seeing is bought.
Yep.
I mean, whether they're buying it through a publicist, whether they're buying the way under the red carpet, it is a money game play. Like, it's mind-blowing. If you have $100,000 to invest in yourself, this time next year, every single person can know who you are, even if you don't have a show or a product.
Right.
Get the right publicity firm and you're there.
Yeah. It's interesting because it feels like something I feel like I've been seeing a lot, and I just might only be seeing certain things, is like this pay-to-play awards situation. And like, those are who are winning these awards, but then not is it just the award, it's like opportunities that follow along after that.
Completely. Like a little birdie told me that even the, at the Met Gala, the ball, there's even a recommended donation to be on that red carpet. Mm. So I would say that the sad reality is no one realizes that celebrities are paying through their management,
sure,
through the fashion houses, and they're investing, you know, their own money to be out in front and to be top of mind.
Yeah.
And that's the unique thing about social media. I mean, the reason why we think that actors are so good at what they do is because we've all suspended our disbelief. We all know they're lying.
Right.
We know you're lying, you know you're lying, right? Well, when we get on social media, I think we do suspend our disbelief, but sometimes we forget. We've all agreed that we're all lying here.
Sure.
On social media.
Well, because it's like you see this thing, and I talked about this with Greg Buck, former guest on the show, about how people don't see the work that goes into what happens on the social media, on the 90-second clip.
Very true.
You know, and at the end of the day, like, while social media can be a powerful tool for promoting yourself, it can also, like you said, cause some of this dissonance between, what is reality and what am I actually doing to make all this happen?
Yeah, I think it's a full-time job to look successful.
Yeah.
Even if you're not.
I think it's more exhausting to try and look successful, to put off the air of success.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sometimes you have to show that in order to find the opportunities that you might not have got because you didn't have the resource to get into the game in the first place. You got to break your way in another way.
So to that point, I tested something one time when I got laid off, and I just came with the reel on LinkedIn. Mm. And I said, you know, I just was laid off. Today was the first time I was laid off. I was laid off twice in the last like 5 years, hashtag winning, right? This was pandemic related.
Sure.
But I said, you know, I'm not too worried because I've been here before. You know, this is the first time, not the first time that I've not had enough money. I know what it's like to not qualify for a loan. And the only loan you do qualify for is your child's piggy bank while they sleep at night. Mm. So I do this post on LinkedIn and it's just calling myself out, just basically how raggedy I am. The total opposite of everything that you see on social media. Patrick, this thing went viral. Over 10 million views on LinkedIn. Mm. U.S. News and World Report did a story on me. And for 15 minutes, I was the most famous woman in the Midwest for not having a job. Not on my vision board, to say the least. But I think when it comes to being viral, when it comes to being relevant, it is helpful to be authentic.
Yeah.
And we forget that because everybody wants to be so perfect.
Well, we're all focused on the product and we're less focused on the process. And
it's true.
We really want to get the kind of the instant gratification of the product, of the finished product, but not so much the long-term sustainable gratification we get when we enjoy the work we do that is authentic in that way.
Yes.
And can come across that way.
It's an abyss.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a black hole. The internet is a black hole. It's never satisfied.
Yeah.
No matter what you throw into it. I think that's freeing. It's freeing that you don't have to be so perfect every time. It's freeing that this thing can't be fully, it can't be fed.
Sure.
No matter what we give it, it just keeps getting bigger.
Yeah. Well, and I think that for someone like yourself who was trained and conditioned to not look at failure as necessarily a bad thing, but as a driver, you know,
right.
I'm assuming in tennis, like as a professional athlete, like you can't dwell on like a lost match or a set. Like you got to move on to the next ball. Like it's coming over the net. Like you got to get ready for that serve. How much of that let me ask you this first. Like what was the pivot from athletics to coaching? Like, did you always know you wanted to coach, or was it to continue chasing the addiction of achievement when it comes to specifically tennis?
I think I began coaching from a very lost place.
Okay.
Didn't know what to do next. And so I thought, I've got the skill. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's try. It was an incredible opportunity after coaching for 1 year to become, you know, the youngest Division I head coach in the nation. But it was only amazing until my players found out I was only 2 years older than them.
Interesting.
So they were like, wait a minute, girl, you ain't nothing. What you trying to tell me to get on this line? Please, you know?
Yeah.
So it was a wonderful experience. They were in the best shape of their lives. I raised so much money and we had more community service hours as an 8-person tennis team than the entire University of Florida football team in that year. I think I'm killing it, right? We're having results on the court. I'm raising the money. A lot of my players didn't like me. I thought I was showing them love by having a lot of expectations, you know, commitment to excellence. To me, that's love, criticism, feedback, but it wasn't being received that way. So it's an interesting thing to be in women's athletics because for some, there's still a component, and we see this in the headlines, of likability.
Right.
You know, I don't know all the details of all the rumblings in women's basketball right now that's happening, but when you really look at some of the things that are being said, what, that person wasn't likable?
Right.
Like, that's the problem with that coach. That's the problem with that player, is that you don't like her. I mean, it's still there.
Yeah.
So that's the hard thing about transitioning from player to coach. It's not as easy as I thought it would be.
Sure.
Definitely.
And how do you navigate? How did you find yourself navigating that at that time?
Oh, just a lot of conflict. It was a lot of conflict. It was a lesson I had to keep learning over and over again. And if I had to do it again, I would try to show my players that I cared more than I cared about the result.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. That's what I learned out of it. Now, it may not have worked. You know, tennis is a sport where when you're 4 years old, you can look at your dad and say, Daddy, you know, I want you to fire Coach Susie because I don't like her.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the profile you're dealing with. So that's the other unique thing about a sport that's being forced to be team from being so individual.
Sure. I think that's one of the things I really liked about track and field was the team aspect of it. So I think that's an interesting juxtaposition with tennis in that way. So you're 1 year of coaching. Did you coach for longer than 1 year?
Yep. I coached down in Florida for about five years. Yes.
So you got a decent amount of time.
It was. And now it's like, it looked good on LinkedIn, right?
Yeah. That does look good on
She's
LinkedIn.
She's stable.
For sure.
Yeah.
5 year stability. Don't look at my LinkedIn because it does not have
No. 18, but 18 months from my time and talent, 18 months is the average. If you make it to 18 months, that's like a gold watch these days, you know?
100%.
It's the only way you're going to make more money. You got to change companies.
Yeah. You know? Well, and you have to know. Well, again, this goes back to this idea of kind of chasing the white rabbit of achievement like wanting to pivot and put yourself in that position, because I think a lot of people either don't want to or they've been put in circumstances where even if they do work that hard, they might not ever get that opportunity for nothing that they've done, for no reason of their own, other than we have a bias, we have a reason that we've chosen to not like you and to therefore not give you that opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, do you know how many people in Indianapolis have to die for you to make $100,000 and get promoted? I mean, it's ridiculous. There's not enough roles sometimes even in cities to support the talent and sustain what we have.
Right.
And we're not even talking about $200,000. So there is a serious cap. People love to work with people that look like them. And that's the system. I mean, I'd blow my hair out before I would even go into an interview, because it's like the more I look like them, the more I look like my dad, who's Caucasian, not white, but Caucasian. That's a whole nother thing. But I would totally do that so that there's less of a difference between me and you hiring manager.
Sure.
And those are real things. It's an unkind world. You put in the ingredients for a cake, you get a cactus coming out.
Yeah.
And that's just hard as an athlete. That's hard for our generation.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a meritocracy
100%.
At all. Yeah.
Did you feel like you had to make certain adjustments going from athletics to corporate once you made that transition? Or did you feel like it was just carryover from what you had already experienced in athletics?
You know, it's, how can I say this? When I have a boss that was a man, it was a little easier. And that was because you shove, I shove back.
Sure.
So actually, you know, in their case, they're like, oh, you're an athlete, you're just like me. it was more challenging and I had to work a lot of my soft skills with dealing and working with women. Because the way that I was raised, if you're not my friend, how would that help me win a tennis match? It's not going to help me. So I was very stunted socially with my soft skills. It was something I had to skill up in.
Sure.
For sure. Like 110%.
Yeah.
But now I have. Watch out, world. Soft skills coming to you.
Well, I was going to say, like, the stuff that I see you sharing online and just, like, when I talk to people about Jennifer Magley, it's just, like, this presence that exudes community to me.
Oh, that's kind of, like, yeah,
like,
to hear.
People, like, love not just your energy, which I'm sure everyone has picked up on here in the 20 minutes that we've been sitting down, but, like, it is this willingness to welcome in.
Right.
And to work together in a collaborative way, because even if you're coaching someone, it's still a collaboration.
Yeah.
Like, you might have skills or resources that you can pass down, but it's also like you got to bring something to the table as the player or the mentee or whatever it might be.
Right.
And so I feel like it's interesting how you started, how you realized, oh, I got to develop these things.
Yeah, I got to be likable.
Yeah. So what, it's not just the soft skills, like likability. And again, it's like,
yes.
But that is something that is put on by stuff outside of our control, outside of your control. Like,
boy,
you shouldn't necessarily have to be likable.
I mean, watch out, AI, because I'm coming for you. I want to learn as quickly as AI does. Now, that's impossible. The only way I could learn as quickly as AI is if I had access to your memories, your father's memories,
right.
and your grandfather, and I knew all of that, right?
Yes.
So that's how quickly AI learns. But I am a student of human beings. So the way that I can make people like me more is if I ask questions,
right.
you know, as you do, and you get them to talk about themselves. And there's different methods and tactics to do that, but I'm a nerd. So since I'm a nerd, I'm reading books, I'm doing experiments, and my intentionality, my heart is there. But when I really talk about it in detail, it gets creepy. You know, I'm robotic. I am a robot. I was telling a friend about that last night. He was like, oh my God, maybe you shouldn't say that out loud. I was like, really? Everyone doesn't do experiments at lunch with their friends? Are you kidding me? Yeah.
Favorite friend experiment that you ever ran?
Well, my favorite one was when I was a flower ninja, as in today. I used to give flowers out for a full year.
Okay.
I wanted to test what Deepak Chopra said. And he said, you know, give what you want to receive in the world. I was reading a lot of that at that time. So I decided to start giving out flowers. And I have received so many flowers since. I just keep receiving flowers.
Yeah.
And it was bizarre. I ended up with more bouquets in than I did out that year. So
little silly
things like that. But it's like, I mean, I don't know if karma's real or not, but why not do an experiment for 365 days, right?
Now, how did you feel post-experiment, like after that 365?
I just thought to myself, this was so fascinating. What's next? What's next? I'm always about that, you know, moving the finish line. You know, how do you celebrate?
Yeah.
What's a win? And it was a win, but I was fascinated with, okay, what's next? What else can I do? What else can I figure out?
What was next? I have trouble when I go through my history of thinking, like, when is the order of these things?
Yeah, the order of things. I then became obsessed with asking. The time to ask, the verbiage, the models, the scripts. How do I get more out of my relationships? In that post on LinkedIn that went viral, the problem I had with my network is that I thought that it was weak. Even though I had 10,000 connections, it was weak because I didn't ask for help.
Sure.
So if you find yourself in a unique position where you feel like, okay, everyone I know doesn't want to help me, have you asked them?
That's true. I feel like that's something that's really hard for a lot of people, is because we don't learn to ask. We learn to just receive the command or the wish or the offer, whatever it is. And like then we go and be the drone to execute on that.
Right.
But when it's like, oh, I want to look at, I need something and like, can I ask for this? A lot of times we're met with resistance.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like for you to start asking? And what was that reception like?
Oh my God, I want to throw up. I completely want to throw up asking someone for something.
Yeah.
But then I started doing research. And so the first thing I came upon was, where's this coming from? Well, everybody says, oh, it's better to give than it is to receive. Is it? Why is it so ugly to receive? There's this symbiosis with giving. So if I open up my hand to give to you, I shouldn't draw it back before I receive something you know, for myself. So that's the part that we're missing. We love to give, but giving is also a form of control. Receiving is not. You're out of control. You're the one who's made vulnerable. So I wanted to be ill when I started asking, but then I thought, somebody knows how to ask. Let me find those books. Let me find those words. I mean, you're talking to a narcissist. You don't know what to say. All you have to say is, and what else? Or mirror the last three words that they say, and they'll just keep talking.
Okay, that's...
See, the nerd.
Okay, let me internalize that real
the
quick.
The nerdy robotic part, yeah.
I think something that I keep thinking about is your forward momentum in a lot of the things that we've talked about in just this very short time. And I heard you say on one of your videos, you go, I am unstoppable when I know what I want and why. So I want to ask you, what do you want and what is your why for wanting?
I'm so thirsty. And when I say I am so thirsty, Patrick, I want it all. I want it all. I want wealth. I want notoriety. I want fame. And I want it for the people around me. Why not? It used to be in my era, in your era, I mean, you're a bit younger than me, all of the celebrities, they weren't on social media. There was no social media. They had mystique. You know, I remember Will Smith just recently got on social media because that was the old star format. Break that on the ground. This is the era of thirst. If we want something, we've got to go out there and get it, say it, ask, DM, at them. It just does not matter because people will see you and people will know your name. So we know the people before we need them.
Yeah.
That's my big drive now. That's what I want. I am unafraid and I own the fact that a girl is thirsty.
You gotta own it. It's the time of thirst. I don't know if that's exactly what you said, but it's thirst time.
The season of thirst.
The season
you know?
Of thirst.
Yes.
I love that. When did you find that? Like, it seems like it was always kind of there.
It's always, yeah.
But when did you have the language to name, this is what I want?
This is what I want. I think it was after I was laid off, I laid down for a nap. Laid off and laid down, right? Yeah. In the season of the nap, right? And I said, gosh, I need to be able to capture what it is that I do because I wasn't at TBL at the time. I was just consulting. Mm-hmm. And I heard a song in my head while I was sleeping. And it goes a little something like this. Sometimes you wanna go. Do you know the end of that? Where everybody knows your name. Bom, 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 bom. And it hit me. It hit me when I woke up from my nap that's what everyone wants. Mm. That bar at Cheers. There's an old show called Cheers. And
Norm.
Every time, yes, someone walked through the door, they would scream your name, right? Yeah. Chipotle tried to do that when you used to walk in, they would say, hi, or hey, maybe it was the other burrito place. But they would scream hi or hello. And that's what everyone is searching for at their core.
Sure.
Everyone wants a place where everyone knows their name. And that place is social media right now. So that became my mission and is to be unapologetic with that need to be known so that other people feel that they can give themselves the permission to just say, yeah, I want to be known. So what? Now what? I beat you to the punch. You want to say I'm thirsty? I'm thirsty. Now what else are we going to talk about? Right? So you reclaim your power by being the thing. Dolly Parton is never afraid of being tacky because she is tacky and she just owns it. So I'm afraid. I'm unafraid of being thirsty. And I'll just own it just like Dolly Parton.
I love that.
Why not? Right? Why not?
I love it. I think it goes back to your point about authenticity and like people wanted to see someone who's authentically themselves.
Yeah.
I think when we talk about wanting it all, I think that there's a negative connotation that comes with it sometimes that it's just like it can be conceited or selfish or facetious or whatever it might be. But at the end of the day, it's not just like it is for you, but it's also, like you said, for everyone around you. You want to lift everybody up. You want to give everybody the opportunities if you can. Before we hopped on mic, we've never met in person before, but you were already asking me, how can we connect? Like, what can we do to work together to grow? And I'm just like, okay, these are the people I want to align myself with who are interested not just in what can I do as me, as Jennifer Magley, to create my own success and sustainability for my life, but how can I utilize the platforms and privileges that I find myself on when I manifest these things for the people around me in my community, whatever that looks like.
Oh, definitely. And the ego feeds itself, right? Yeah. Like you feel good because you're using your talents and you're helping someone else, but nothing's better than when both folks want that connection, when both folks want that introduction.
Yeah.
And I would encourage anybody watching or listening, be prepared for when someone says, who's a good introduction for you? Who's a good referral for you? What's the type of person you want to meet? In what industry are they interested in?
Yeah.
So that way you can just spit it out. And you're 100%. Like, oh, yeah, this is actually my ask. Tom, top of mind. That's my favorite thing to ask. Can you keep me top of mind for, and then fill in the blank.
Mm, I love that. You did ask me that question when you came in here. I fumbled through the answer. I got to get my questions right.
You're perfectly fine. And you can always say, yeah, you know what? Let me think about that. I'll get back to you.
That's true.
And it's a great way to continue the conversation. You're winning, Patrick, no matter what. Yeah. You're winning.
Yeah. I like that. That's brought me back to some of my corporate think sales and customer service days. I'm not 100% sure, but let me get back to you.
Let me
talk to somebody who knows, and I will get you the answer.
That's exactly right.
I appreciate you sharing all that. Another thing that I took away from some of the stuff that you've shared online is this thing called the inch analogy.
Yeah.
I was wondering, okay, so I wrote about, like you talked about perspective is power. It can be empowering to think about how much you achieve when you can give just an inch more each day. Right. I'm wondering if you could share a little bit more about this particular analogy and where that came from.
Yes, I was coaching and I was trying to be creative. And I thought, how can I reach my players? How can I inspire them or let them see the compound effect of giving just a little more every day? You know, doubling your penny at the end of 28 days, you're going to have, $1 million or something along those lines, right? Like, let's just do it ourselves and find out. But the inch, so what's the difference when you look at it? And I actually, when I ask a room full of people, it's its own TED Talk because everybody thinks an inch is a little bit different.
Sure.
It's kind of funny when you think about it. Most people go phallic, I would imagine, in their minds. They're thinking about their inch. But I would say, is the inch really a lot? If you're able-bodied and you're athletic, if I asked you to jump an inch, could you do it? Yeah. If we were going to go and do a race and I asked you an inch-long race, would you participate in that? Probably. But what if we went shopping for houses and I've got my Oprah on, everybody gets a house, you know, in this room today. And you're looking at the house, you love it, the house is looking at you. But the only thing is that house is 1 inch off of its foundation. Do you buy that house? Goodness forbid, tomorrow you need surgery on your brain. But the doctor, she went out, she had a little too much to drink the night before. And instead of operating on your head, Patrick, right here, she was an inch off. Mm. Would that make a difference in your life? This is how much it takes to be great, is giving this much more every single day. So that perspective of just giving a very small amount and really how a small amount can be monumental. That's kind of the analogy and where it came from.
Yeah. Well, I love it because it made me think about just like the compounding of, like you said, like that compounding effect of what happens when you when it's just a little bit. Because as people of the global majority specifically, like, there are already barriers in place that make it so we're an inch behind, if not more. And so we have a lot of ground to make up. Like, our foundations are offset and we have to recenter them a little bit as we navigate our way through the world, whatever our skills might be. And we have so many things that are set against us. It can be hard sometimes to feel like, well, I have 40 barriers to jump. Like, and I feel like I'm running out of time. The sense of urgency is high. So I want to jump all 40. When in reality, if we were just empowered and affirmed each day, we could make an inch worth of progress. We can clear one barrier, one hurdle, and continue to do that. And even if we get set back one, like, we're still making that forward progress. That's why I really like the analogy.
Oh, thank you.
The way that you tell it, because it's just like you make it engaging, like an engaging thing. And it's just like, oh, that sits like seated in my brain a little bit and thinking about, okay, what's one more thing I can do today to help my tomorrow?
Completely. And I would say that this is quite bold, but America was founded behind the scenes, right? By people of power at tables that we weren't invited to. And they created a system and a network. And I believe that it's only through giving that inch of reaching out and connecting that we can begin to create a five-finger fist that can break through that system. Because if we don't connect and give an inch and say, oh, I'm really uncomfortable, I don't want a cold outreach to this person, that's how we make the difference, is because it's like, yo, I got Patrick's back. So I'm going to be in rooms talking about him that he's not even in. And that is how America began. And that's the only way we can begin to change America, in my view, for folks like us.
No, I love that. It makes me think about the conversation we had with Anthony Murdoch last month, where we talked about the only way you can disrupt the system in place to oppress somebody is by building another system.
Right.
Like, to take it out.
That's
and
right.
I like that you talk about like the five finger fist to punch through, because it is like, it takes all five fingers to make that fist.
Yeah.
And you could make a fist with less, but is it going to be enough to break through hundreds and hundreds of years of systemic barrier.
Right.
And most likely it's not going to. Like, and if we can see those connections, continue to pull the threads up, we can break through that system and set something
yeah.
up.
Yeah. And this is documented. I mean, even yeah. folks, and I'm not saying that these great minds had issues, but like Edison, Ford, Napoleon Hill talks about it. These were men back in the day that created groups that met once a week. And when they came together and brought the need, they thought they were creating what they called a third mind. Mm. So I think about these guys in the 30s with their three-piece suits on, probably sweating bullets yeah. around a room, Kinky in the brain, thinking, what is it that you need, Ford? You know, so we need to do that. We need to meet regularly. We need to ask, what are you looking for? What do you need? I'll keep an eye out. And that is how, you know, people become successful is because it's not just them. As you said, they're bringing folks along, but they're sharing the need. We have a problem sharing our need because we've been gaslit into believing that it's our fault. Mm. It's not our fault, but we do have the power to address it, but we've got to say that we need. I need. So try saying it at home. I need.
I need.
I need.
That's a word. That's a word right there. And that's making me think of all of these conversations we've been having about the Indianapolis creative community.
Oh, yeah.
And thinking about how we're trying to establish what's the gap? Mm-hmm. Like, what do we need to fill? And I think that there are entities and organizations and individuals who have been finding their way and finding ways to fill those gaps. And are we still lacking in the connective tissue between all of those disparate parts to pull us together to create that fist in the first place?
Right.
And I appreciate everything that you just said right there because I feel like it hits that nail on the head of why community is so important and why I think for me, from my perspective, you give off this vibe of authentic community and why other people have told me as such because you are operating in those spaces. And you are sharing people's names in rooms that they're not in.
Oh, thank you.
And if we can do that for folks like us, we can really create that change here in the city. Who are some people or organizations or folks that you have seen trying to fill some of these gaps, yourself notwithstanding?
Oh, totally. I think individual-wise, it's Brandi Davis Handy from AES, newly named president, first Black woman to ever be the president of AES. She's always looking up, looking out. She's on board. I know that she supports Gang Gang. She supports, I mean, everyone in town. I'd say Angela Freeman, who is, I believe, the third Black partner at Barnes & Thornburg. She's got a podcast for the IBJ. She's always looking up and out. And these are folks that have made it, and they said, hey, this is it right here. Let me open this door. Hurry, get in while we can. And I just love that. I love their intentionality. I think that they are so very powerful, and they're powerful because they bring everyone along with them, like for sure.
And that's what we need. That's the system.
Yeah.
We got to infiltrate into those systems in order to build the system of maybe not reciprocity, but like, and I don't want to say trickle down. It's not trickle down. Maybe cut that out. of like, I don't want to say handing out, but just like passing it through to get people in a position to remake the way that these things look.
I think the word for me is relentless. I am not going away.
Yeah.
I am not going away. And I believe that when we are relentless, every no I collect is a guaranteed yes in the future. Mm. So pile those no's on me, reject me, because you're guaranteeing my success.
Sure.
So as we are relentless and we continue to announce, I'm here. We say it every single day again and again. Look, when you're on the red carpet, if you're the talent, somebody is there, but there's another person introducing you down the line every single time, saying, take a picture of her. That's Evelyn Magley. She's the first woman to own a pro sports league. Mm. Hey, did you know that's Evelyn Magley? She owns two pro sports leagues, even before Danny Garcia of the UFL, formerly XFL. You got to hype that person every single time when you're going on the line. And that's what we do for each other relentlessly. I think we got to be relentless.
I love that. That's another word right there. Okay. You brought up your mother.
Yes.
Evelyn Magley.
Oh, I'm my mom's momager.
Talked about TBL, the basketball league. So yes. I wanted to get to that. You talked about it a little bit, but can you give people a little deeper breakdown of what the TBL is, what specifically that they do, and how your mom decided, hey, I'm going to start this basketball league?
This woman is so passionate. She is 66 years old. At 60 years old, she decides, I'm going to start my own basketball league. It's basically a vision of sorts that she has. She wakes up my dad, who's got a CPAP mask on in the middle of the night, look like Darth Vader. She's like, I'm going to start my own league. He's like, oh, what are you talking about? And, you know, fast forward, they're 6 years in, 38 different markets across America. They have the largest geographical footprint of a professional basketball league. Mm. And when we say it's a different league, Patrick, like the social media is not glossy. You know, it's not going to blow you away. This is blue collar basketball. Sure. These folks are in smaller markets. Kokomo, you know, they're in Medora. Yeah, we've got teams all over the country, but these are markets that the NBA can't touch and won't touch. Skirt. Okay. Right. They're not going to go there. If you go to a G League game, nobody's even there.
Yeah.
The whole purpose of the G League, which is wonderful, is to get players into the NBA. It's not to build community.
Right.
It's not to get people out to the games. That's just not the business model for them. So my family's been able to go into these markets where maybe G League teams used to be and plug into the community. And now, I mean, there's players that are there all year round. They're substitute teaching. They found, you know, lives and partners. And that's why we say hashtag a different league. Mm. And no one knows who my mom is. So my calling, as I have called myself, is the impossible. I live in Brownsburg, Indiana, and my task is to get a 66-year-old Black woman to be known in every single household. How do you do that? And I'm all about it every day, all day, every day. So that is where I'm at right now, is let's get this woman on Dancing with the Stars. Even if she falls down, even better, you know? Everyone's going to know who she is.
Yeah.
Because if they know you before they need you, that's when you're going to have opportunity.
Right.
Is when people know who you are.
Well, it's an opportunity to get your flowers in a way. Well that's
hey,
the thing.
So like, flowers.
So, like, I think it's so interesting. My family, like, my grandparents were people who like to do a bunch of stuff, but they didn't want anybody to know.
Right.
And
that's
okay. And I think there's a lot of power in that.
There
I
is.
Think that's totally
there
okay.
Is.
And I also think too, for especially for people of the global majority, people from historically marginalized communities, there is power in that visibility of someone who inhabits something similar, like a lived experience, who's made it.
Definitely.
Done something that has never been done before.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so awesome about what you're doing, not only with the league, but with your mom specifically, is like, I'm not just going to take over. I'm just trying to help with brand operations for everything that we have going on. I'm going to help your brand.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think it's like pre-caregiving, right? So like, let's kill it. Strike while the iron's hot.
Yeah.
Before you got to retire,
yeah.
You know, but I definitely love being my mom's momager. She's the daughter I never asked for. So when we hang out, I text my sister, hey, I'm taking my three kids to the basketball game. But she's hysterical. She's passionate. She's all about it. She sees these guys as being, you know, akin to her sons because that's the era of life that she's in. And when we say a different league, they're really so into the community.
Yeah.
They're just super, super passionate. And I'm super passionate about how do we find partners that understand what it is to have a youth clinic and have 100 kids showed up that never would have touched a basketball or been a part of anything previously, you know, for free that in their small town. So that's where the passion comes from for sure.
The community aspect I love because, like, especially for All-Star, you see people turn out to the city. They might not even be Pacers fans, but they're interested in, like, what's going on in the city.
Right.
And it's like, if we were willing, we can do that in this, like, quote-unquote hub of where we are in Indianapolis. And how are we reaching those other communities that are out there who also are interested in doing something like this but may not have the means or resources to get there?
Definitely, yeah. I think that, you know, when you go sit courtside, it's going to be, what, $3,000 a pop?
It's expensive.
If you're going to sit down on the lower level at a Pacers game, you're looking at $600. I think for the same amount of money, $600, you can do like a whole family pass for the season for even less.
Sure.
And that's what people want. People want to be able to entertain their family without having to go in their savings account.
Yeah.
You got a little guy. You know what it is
100%.
Now. Like,
yeah. I looked at the numbers. They got a lot higher.
Yeah, they do.
Before and after. Another thing I love about the league is that they do stuff to empower kids to take on roles.
Oh, my gosh.
And I read an article that your kids are in C-suite roles in the junior TBL. Can you talk about that and, like, what that experience has been like?
Oh, my goodness gracious. You know, it's hard to tell a 9-year-old to clean their room when they're the president or CEO of a organization. Look, I strive and aim for there to be complete nepotism in my family. I want to be a Nepo baby that would be like the best of the best. Can you imagine? Like, I am a Nepo baby, but successful.
Sure.
That's what we want, right? Like, hand it down. That's what the American dream is. Like, you got a plumbing company. Yeah. You're going to hand it down to your plumber kid who wants to be a doctor. You know, like, it never quite works out. But for them, they are, you know, it's a community initiative, Junior TBL. They have their own mission statement, is to create leaders, problem solvers, innovators, and people that do what is right. Mm. They do a lot of public speaking. They have all picked up all of these dictator earmarks of like, repeat after me, call to action, sit down. I mean, I don't know where they would get any of these things from.
Sure.
It's really from their grandma. I'm usually amazed when I see them speak, but it's pretty neat to see them empowered. And I think if people put their kids in like Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts or Scouts, whatever they call them now, like, hey, why not have these guys have an opportunity within a family org and with basketball, something they love?
Yeah. Do they like to play as well? Or?
They do. Okay. They really like to play. We've got the 12-year-old wears a men's size 12 shoe.
Okay.
So that's going to be a big stomper right there. Quiet speaker. Big stomp. Yes. Right now he's like a praying mantis. He's so very Kevin Durant type of vibe now. But I'm hoping
High bar.
Yeah, my dad's jeans are filling though. He's going to put some LBs on eventually. He's going to be a big boy. Here's hoping.
He get in the post and he can be like our boy Robbie in ISU.
Yeah, I know. But then I saw like Siakam the other night. And I was like, he's kind of skinny too. So maybe, I don't know what this kid's going to do.
He's been doing a lot of running since he got here.
That's right.
I'm wondering what, like, I feel like you've touched on a lot of different things that are maybe missing from, or that we are not talking about enough from this idea of asking for what you need.
Mm-hmm.
What, for somebody who's looking to enter into any space and doesn't know how to start doing that, what advice would you have for that person, whatever their career path might look like or whatever it is that they want to do?
Wonderful book called A More Beautiful Question. Check that out. Your opener is as easy as, what are you excited about right now?
Mm.
And you let the person speak. Start your sentence with the last three words that they said. That's an FBI mirroring technique. Chris Voss, Never Split the Difference. That's a great book that you can draw from. And then have your asks in your meeting and your comms sent out at the right time of day, especially if you're trying to close someone. So avoid the hours of 2 to 4. That's from Daniel Pink's Win. And really try to move people to the obvious. The obvious is what works best for you, Tuesday or Thursday. Mm. Not, let me know a good time you want to meet. Not going to move us anywhere. So those are the tangible, tactical things that you can implement quickly, is those type of alternate choice questions. And literally, questions are the key. Whoever is asking the questions is the person who's in control of the conversation.
Mm.
So if you don't even know what to say, don't worry. Just ask a question.
That's true.
They'll just keep talking, and they will like you because you're talking. They're talking about themselves.
Yeah, they're talking about themselves.
They're talking about themselves.
Because that's where we get affirmation when we're seen and validated and heard in that way.
Yeah. That's why
people know our name.
People like us when they talk about themselves.
Yeah.
That's what I've learned. So shut up. If you want to be likable, shut up, ask questions. I'm talking to myself now.
Well, it's fun because that's like you make a living speaking and you do
it's
a
so
lot,
weird.
You know, and it's like, but your speaking is empowering other people to use their voice. So eventually you won't have to.
It's so bizarre. It's odd because it's a combo of knowing when to speak and when to shut up. Because when you consult, all I do is ask questions and the people arrive at the conclusion themselves.
Yeah.
Right. But when you speak, it's like, how do I get a directive? That's why I like doing a lot of workshops.
Yeah.
And, you know,
like
when it's under 500 people. Yeah.
How is that, like, how do you navigate that? Is it just situational? Or is it like when you're like, okay, I need to step off the gas or I need to maybe put it on a little bit?
In a speaking situation?
Oh, gosh,
I've got a whole process. So if you're interested in knowing how to get exactly the amount of money that you want when you speak, DM me. I can hook you up and let you know how it works.
Okay.
But there is a method of doing all of it. And so I arrive at what type of presentation I want to give by asking, is this a paid event for people attending? How many people are attending? What do you want the takeaway to be? And then we become bespoke from there. But yeah, it's definitely, if it's under 500 people, you're going to bore yourself if you don't get people talking and doing things.
Yeah, that's why TED Talks are only 18 minutes.
Oh my gosh, but TED Talks, they have to rehearse those things word for word. They're canned. TED.
There's been some good ones, but
of course,
I agree.
But my gosh, like, I don't know. Now they all sound like ChatGPT.
They might be. Maybe they are. They might be. AI coming for you.
AI, we're learning. We're gaining. Please be nice to me in the revolution. Yes. So yes, I treat my phone well. I don't.
Yeah,
yes.
Same. I try to at least.
My best friend.
Well, you've been giving a lot of high praise to people, naming a lot of different resources for folks to be able to check out, and I really appreciate that. We're going to link all of those things in the show notes, so check down below if you want to find any of those books, any of those other people, any of those folks, if you want to connect with Jennifer to do all of those things, figure out how much money you want to make, hit her in the DMs. And we are going to kick off a very brand new segment with you called Give Them Their Flowers. This is called Give Them Their Flowers, presented by Frida's Flowers right here in Indianapolis. Shout out to Madeline. This is a segment where guests can take a moment to give someone or something their well-deserved flowers. So, Jennifer, I want to ask you, who would you like to throw some shine on? Who would you like to throw some shine on today?
Who am I going to throw some shine on today, Patrick? This one goes out to Samantha Burke, Executive Director of Pass the Torch Foundation. And she's amazing. She's always uplifting other women, giving them their flowers, and providing a safe space for mentorship. I love the work that they do here in town. So, Samantha Burke, these flowers would be for you if I wasn't so greedy.
Yeah, you don't have to give
flowers. It's the thought that counts.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? So shout out to Samantha Burke.
Yeah. Samantha, shout out to you.
Yes, next time.
You were right there on top with that. Like, this is a brand new thing. Like, you didn't know I was going to ask you that question.
Yeah, I did not. Yeah.
Yeah, so I appreciate that. All right. I already asked you what advice you have for a young person trying to take it to the next level. So my last question before we wrap this up is going to be this. You're looking back now at young Jennifer at IMG, getting the tennis on, chasing the addiction of achievement or understanding, oh, this is something that I'm addicted to, I think. What advice do you have for her as she journeys to become where you are now?
None. She's got to learn the hard way.
Okay. Cutting it off.
She got to learn the hard way, you know? Because if I saw this woman who is 40, she's, you know, got great baby abs up here, has to shave her face twice a day because of hormone issues. I don't know what I would be thinking. I'd be like, you got it together on one front, but what about the other, girl? So I would probably let her learn the hard way.
Okay.
Because anything that would make that decision different, I wouldn't end up with the two beautiful kids I have today and finding my person, despite all the pain that it took to get there. So
yeah,
that's what we'll say.
We'll say that. Yes. We'll snap to that. Jennifer, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you here. I want to have you back to talk more things, the basketball league, more things, the TBL in the future. Before we do that, though, last question. How do we support you once we get out of here? How do we follow you? How do we find you? How do we hire you to do work for us?
Oh my gosh, it's so funny that you would ask that. I would say connect with me on LinkedIn if you're very interested. And then also message me because I am looking for partnerships, people that want to partner with the Professional Basketball League. That's what I would say.
There we go.
Direct address. You only see that in comedy or documentaries. So
I like it.
On your podcast.
That's why we have three cameras.
Yeah. So. Your podcast now, it's a direct address.
I love it. Yep. It's going to make a great clip. And we'll have all of that linked in the show notes as well. So you can get a hold of Jennifer and the TBL to form those partnerships. You can also buy her book, How to Be a Queen, which I have a copy of. Somewhere,
I am so impressed. Thank you. It's as long and as short as a Cheesecake Factory menu.
I love it. A 50-page fable. Yeah, I appreciate it. And yeah, that's really great. Awesome. Well, it was, again, a pleasure to have you in here. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Everybody else, you know, episodes drop on Tuesdays every week. If you want to find out more and check out the archives, you can go to conversationpeacepod.com. If you want to follow us on Instagram, you can do so at conversationpodpeace. And we have some really cool stuff happening in the rest of May and in June and coming up. Hopefully it's merch stuff, but we're recording this in April, so I'm not sure if it is. Anyways, until all of that comes out, I have been the titular Patrick. This has been Conversation Piece, and we'll see y'all soon.